Hi, folks. Doug McBurney here. Keeping Bob Enyart live on the radio is a labor of love that demands our attention every now and then. And he needs your help to stay on the radio for another year. Bob's presence on the radio gives him the ability to promote godly ideas on the terrestrial airwaves. I'm asking you to go online to purchase any or all of Bob's eye-opening Christian resources available in written, audio, or video formats. Go to kgov.com and come alongside Bob's vital ministry and keep Bob broadcasting for another year. That's kgov.com, kgov.com right now to give Bob the essential support that only you can offer.
Warning is truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob Enyart Live.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This is Theology Thursday. Typically, we look at the news of the day from a Christian worldview. Today, we look at the source of the Christian worldview, God's Word.
Please open in your Bible to the book of Judges. Verse 8, the children of Judah fought against Jerusalem and took it. They struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. And afterward, the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites, who dwelt in the mountains in the south and in the lowland. Then Judah went against the Canaanites who dwelt in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kirjath Arba, and they killed Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai. And those three guys are mentioned, and what do we know about them? Well, the former name of the city of Hebron tells us why they mentioned these guys, because the city was called Kirjath Arba, the city of Arba. And Arba, we learned, was previously in the last book, Joshua chapter 14, he was of the Anakim. He was the strongest man in the region of the Anakim. And the Anakim, like the Nephilim, are the giants, the descendants of the fallen angels and women, human women. And so they were giants, and they lived in the land before the flood in Genesis 6 and after the flood, as Moses writes. Eventually, David killed off the giants. And so there are no such beings alive any longer in the history of the world. But so these three guys were undoubtedly of the Anakim. Verse 11, from there they went against the inhabitants of Debir. The name of Debir was formerly Kirjath Sefer. Then Caleb, now he's of the tribe of Judah, then Caleb said, whoever attacks Kirjath Sefer and takes it, to him I will give my daughter Aksa as wife. And this might sound familiar because this is retold from the book of Joshua chapter 15. So we saw this story, and I think that now that Moses has died and then Joshua died, they're about to continue the sacred history of Israel and the sacred writing. God is inspiring them to continue the story of Scripture, and so they repeat this short story here as a way of connecting this book to the previous book, so that the nation will identify and accept this as a continuation of the unfolding revelation of God. So, Caleb says, if you take this city, if you destroy the city, take it, conquer it, then I will give my daughter Aksa as wife. And, of course, today in our culture, we read that, and that could sound horrifying to a young woman. What do you mean? I'm just being offered to some warrior? But a couple things. As you read in the story, you could tell Aksa is not very angry about the setup whatsoever. She would like a strong man to be her husband and help her raise children and a family and take care of her and eventually her grandkids. So this was not something done against her or even against her wishes. There were many arranged marriages in ancient history and even in modern history in some cultures, like in Pakistan, for example, today and elsewhere. But there are also arranged marriages where they're not forced or compelled. If the man or the woman is horrified by this person they're told to marry, quite often they could refuse. So we think of arranged marriages as you have no choice, and that certainly could be in some cultures and families. But the arranged marriages in Scripture, we see that people were pretty excited. Abraham sent out his servant to find a bride for Isaac, and he finds Rebekah, and the servant brings Rebekah to Isaac. And he complained and argued and said, I don't want to have anything to do with her. That's not the case at all. He fell in love with her instantly, as it seems to come across in the text. And they lived a long and wonderful life together. Verse 13, and Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it. So he gave him his daughter Achsah as wife. Now, Caleb, his father is not named Kenaz. So this is interesting. This guy is Othniel. Now he turns out to be, this is the book of Judges. He turns out to be a judge over the nation of Israel in Judges chapter 3. And once again there, we're told that Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, was raised up by God to be a deliverer, a judge. Well, Caleb's father's name was Jephunneh, Jephunneh. And here's his brother, Othniel, with a different father's name, the son of Kenaz. And so what may have happened is Caleb's parents had him, and then his father died, and his mother remarried. And so Othniel, it seems, is his half-brother. So Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it, the city. So he gave him his daughter Achsah as wife. Now it happened when she came to him that she urged him to ask her father for a field. And she dismounted from her donkey, and Caleb said to her, what do you wish? So she said to him, give me a blessing. Since you have given me land in the south, give me also springs of water. And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. So we talked through that story back in Joshua chapter 15. Let's continue. Now the children of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up from the city of Palms with the children of Judah into the wilderness of Judah, which lies in the south near Arad, and they went and dwelt among the people. So Moses' father-in-law, here he's called a Kenite, and that's more information than we had until this point. His name was Jethro. He was a Midianite. In fact, he is a priest of Midian. And where did the Midianites come from? Well, remember, Abraham had Isaac and Ishmael, and the messianic blessing went through Isaac, who was the second born. And then Sarah, his wife, died. And he remarried a woman named Keturah. And the Bible lists six sons he had with Keturah. This is Abraham. We don't think of Abraham having a lot of other sons, but he did. And the fourth of those sons was Midian. So the Midianites were the descendants of Abraham, but not through Isaac. So they did not inherit the messianic blessing. So Moses fled Egypt when he realized he's Jewish. He sees an Egyptian officer taking advantage, beating one of his brothers, another Jew, and he interfered, and perhaps in self-defense, he kills that officer, and it becomes known, so he fled. He goes out into the wilderness, and he meets a woman, marries her, and her father is the priest of Midian. Well, her father then tracks down Moses, because Moses goes to deliver the nation, let my people go. Except that he left his wife and his kids back home with the father-in-law. The father-in-law didn't like that at all. So Moses is the victorious deliverer, and he's leading the nation, and Jethro gets the wife and the kids and comes and looks for him. He says, hey, you're not leaving me with these guys, and brings them back, and Moses is like, oh boy, they're coming. So Jethro, his father-in-law, end up being a man who trusted in God, had faith, and he gave Moses very wise counsel about how to set up a system of judges over the nation. So Jethro turns out to be a really neat guy who we will see he's one of the redeemed. The city of Palms that they went to, that's another name for Jericho. And Jericho, even though it's so near the Dead Sea, and that whole region is so arid and almost hostile, the desert, Jericho is an oasis, and to this day, it is green and has palm trees, so they called it back then the City of Palms. And verse 17, and Judah went with his brother Simeon, and they attacked the Canaanites who inhabited Zephath and utterly destroyed it. Zephath used to be called Hormah, we'll read in this verse. And we'll talk about that in a moment. So they attacked the Canaanites who inhabited Zephath and utterly destroyed it. That's in the extreme south in Israel. So the name of the city was called Hormah. Now, Hormah means accursed. So why would they call a city accursed? Well, this city comes into the story earlier during the time of Moses when the Israelites are wandering in the wilderness and the king of Arad, who's a Canaanite, who lives down in Zephath, realizes that the Israelites are a force to be reckoned with. So he gathers some allies and army and goes out after them. God blesses the Israelites and they war against Arad and they defeat him. And then they go and wreak havoc on his city. And so they rename the city Hormah, which means accursed. So you had this beautiful city, Zephath, you came after us. Now your city, your capital, is accursed. So now the Israelites, this is a couple generations later, they're now in the land. They have to retake that city. And then it's got its old name, so they rename it again, accursed. They call the city they're going to live in accursed because, hey, we destroyed it once, and it's accursed, Hormah, so it's accursed. That seems a little peculiar to name a city you're going to live in accursed that you've just conquered. But in Israel, they became a nation again in 1948. The land of Israel was reborn. There was no Israel for almost 2,000 years. After the Romans destroyed it in AD 70 with General Titus. So Israel had existed. It was 1,000 years from when David established his throne in Jerusalem. And while they had all kinds of trials, and they were carried off to Babylon for 70 years and exiled, then they came back and rebuilt their temple and their city. They were destroyed then by the Romans. And there was no Israel for about 2,000 years. Until after World War II, many of the Jews had been returning to Zion, and there was an effort to reestablish them as a nation, and in part because of how brutally wicked the Germans were to the Jews, to give them a homeland where they could defend themselves. Now, much of the world still hated the Jews. Certainly, the Arabs hated the Jews, and the day they became a nation, 5 Arab armies invaded. And up until that day, Israel was not a nation, and the British were ruling, the British mandate, and the British did not allow the Jews to even own a gun. You couldn't own one gun. And so here they are, a brand new nation. Of course, they had a lot of guns. They're pretty wise and resourceful. And these Arab armies attack, and Israel destroys the armies and establishes themselves in that land. Well, the first Jew to be born in the nation of Israel under their new stateship, May 14th, 1948, he was born around midnight. His mother realized how historic this was, and the hospital official said, "Your son will be the first Jew born." And she thought, "Well, I should name him out of the Bible. So I got to give him a Bible name." So she called him, she didn't know the Bible, which is almost the symbol of the whole state of Israel today. So she named him Nimrod, thinking maybe that's a good Bible name. And Nimrod is the evil king and founder of the wicked empire of Babylon. So that is a picture of how lost believers could be, whether they be Jew or Christians. And Nimrod, by the way, became a certified tour guide. And in Israel, they have their minister of tourism and agriculture. And they take all that very seriously. And so we went one of our three tours to Israel, and Nimrod was our tour guide. And he hates God. He utterly hates God. And not only Jesus Christ, he just hates God. If there's a God of Abraham, he hates him. So what a sad state of affairs. Well, anyway, they named the city Hormah, which means accursed. Verse 18. Also, Judah took Gaza with its territory. That's the Gaza Strip we hear about today with the Palestinian Authority. What a mess. How evil and wicked. Not only fighting Israel, trying to kill innocent men, women, and children, but fighting and killing one another. It's the same Gaza, the same Gaza Strip. The cities are there, only today the cities are excavated, like these Ashkelon with its territory and Ekron with its territory. There were five cities of Gaza, and David fought Goliath, who was of one of the cities of Gaza. So the Lord was with Judah, and they drove out the mountaineers, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the lowland because they had chariots of iron. Now, it says that's why they couldn't, because they were stronger. They were more entrenched. But I think there's a spiritual truth behind that. They didn't have enough confidence in God to go after them. God, I believe, would have given them the victory. But they had fear. Verse 20. And they gave Hebron to Caleb, as Moses had said. And we've discussed all these territories and cities that were allotted to the different tribes and leaders. Then he expelled from there the three sons of Anak, the Anakim. But the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who inhabited Jerusalem. Remember, Benjamin was the last born of the 12 sons. So we go from Judah. Reuben is left out of the picture because he just lost it. He lost the birthright. And so the Levites, they're the priestly tribe. And they're not going to get an inheritance. And they have a special role. But it doesn't look like God's going to choose the Levites to bring the Messiah, because there will be a Levitical priesthood. Christ's priesthood would not be after the order of the Levites and Aaron the high priest. It would predate them and go back to the priesthood of Melchizedek, back in the time of Abraham, so that Jesus Christ would not come out of the priestly tribe. He was greater than the priestly tribe. The priestly tribe is subservient to him, as the book of Hebrews explains. So here we go from Judah, who, when you look at all the tribes, they were doing pretty well. Not perfect. They're sinners. But even that doesn't justify the things they did wrong, and eventually the things King David did wrong. But they were sinners, and they weren't perfect, but they were pretty good, given what God had to work with. So then God goes, in this sacred record, to the children of Benjamin. And while we have this big account of what Judah has done so far, the children of Benjamin, the last born of Joseph, did not drive out the Jebusites who inhabited Jerusalem. So the Jebusites dwell with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. And the house of Joseph also went up against Bethel, and the Lord was with them. So the house of Joseph sent men to spy out Bethel. The name of the city was formerly Luz. And when the spies saw a man coming out of the city, they said to him, "Please show us the entrance to the city, and we will show you mercy." So he showed them the entrance to the city, and they struck the city with the edge of the sword, but let the man and all his family go. And the man went to the land of the Hittites, up north toward Turkey, built a city, and called its name Luz, which is its name to this day. So when they asked him, "Show us the entrance to the city," it's not like they were blind, they couldn't find it. They were talking about a secret entrance, how they could exploit the city. Cities were walled, many of them. The greater cities were walled. The gates were very sophisticated. You think of a gate of a city, just a gate like your front of your house and a fence and a little lock. No, the city walls, some of you have traveled with us to Turkey and Israel and Greece, How thick are some of the city walls? I'm looking at Al Sharon back there, Connie, others. The city wall might be 20 feet thick. And there are rooms inside the city walls. And the gate might not be just a big door with heavy locks and bars. It might be a passageway that you have to turn. You go in, you have to turn to the left, turn to the right, go down a hall, turn to the left, and then you're in the city. Why do they do that? Because otherwise, invaders might come on their horses and just charge through the city gate. So now, if you're on horses, you can't charge through. The horses have to stop, and the guys up on top will pour boiling oil on your head. So it would cause people to hesitate. So they asked this man of the city, show us the entrance to the city. Show us how we could get in, and we'll show you mercy, similar to what happened with Rahab. And that is this story now, this little vignette going on with the house of Joseph. Remember that Joseph is the son of Jacob's beloved wife, Rachel. He wanted to marry Rachel, but Laban pulled a fast one. No electric lights before Thomas Edison. The wedding was at night, the reception, and then he sent Rachel's older sister, Leah, to go off with Jacob, and she had her veil on, and he thought he married Rachel, he married Leah. So that was pretty shocking. And then Laban said, it should not be that a sister would be married off before her older sister. But Jacob wanted Rachel, so Laban said, okay, you could work for me another 7 years, and you could have Rachel. But he didn't have to wait 7 years. You can tell by the way his children were born and their ages and all, his age, really, that he married Rachel immediately then, but then fulfilled her week and worked the next 7 years for his uncle. Then he skedaddled out of there as quick as he could. Okay, so Joseph was the firstborn of Rachel, and Reuben was the firstborn of Leah. So when the firstborn lost the birthright because of how evil Reuben was, it went to the firstborn of his second wife, to Joseph. So there was a pattern to it. There was a logic to it. And Joseph was saving his entire family in Egypt. So we could see how Jacob really was pleased with Joseph and why he was thinking, hey, Joseph, he's the one. I'm going to pass the birthright on to Joseph. Because of his 12 sons, he was by far the righteous and the one with whom there was the most hope. So that's the story of Joseph. So Joseph's hanging in there. And the tribal contest is not a complete disaster. He's sort of hanging in. Not nearly as many victories as Judah, but he's got something. He's got some showing. Verse 27. However, Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shean and its villages. And you could go visit Beth Shean today, an agricultural dig, a tell, they call it, or Tanakh and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, or the inhabitants of Iblim and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. And that's a great place to visit, Megiddo. That's Armageddon, the valley of Megiddo. And what an archaeological site that is. It's awesome to go there. For the Canaanites were determined to dwell in the land. So what's this tribe, Manasseh? Well, they're not doing very well. Well, Manasseh is half of the tribe of Joseph. And notice, everything here is, they didn't do this, they didn't do it, they didn't do it, they didn't do it, they didn't do it. So that's very different from Judah. Did it, did it, did it, did it, did it. So there's some success in Joseph, but then when you look at the half-tribes, Manasseh did not drive them out. And that's the phrase that's characteristic now of this chapter. Verse 28. And it came to pass when Israel was strong that they put the Canaanites under tribute. In other words, they told the Canaanites, you have to pay us a fine, a tax, because you're living in our country. But they didn't drive them out. And that's how that verse ends. But did not completely drive them out, nor did Ephraim. Ephraim is the other half of Joseph. Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And they're the two half-tribes. So, nor did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites who dwelt in Gezer. So the Canaanites dwelt in Gezer among them. Verse 30. Nor did Zebulun, this is the name of another tribe, the sons of Jacob, nor did Zebulun drive out the inhabitants of Kitron or the inhabitants of Nahalal. So the Canaanites dwelt among them and were put under tribute. Nor did Asher, this is the name of another tribe, nor did Asher drive out the inhabitants of Akko or the inhabitants of Sidon, that's on the coast of the Mediterranean, or of Alab, Aksib, Helba, Afik, or Rehob. So the Asherites, that's the tribe of Asher, dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Nor did Naphtali, that's another of the 12 tribes, the name of one of Jacob's sons. Nor did Naphtali drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, or the inhabitants of Beth Anath, but they dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Nevertheless, the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and Beth Anath were put under tribute to them. And the Amorites forced the children of Dan into the mountains. Now Dan, that's the name of another of the tribes of Israel. The Amorites, who are pagans, forced the children of Dan to flee into the mountains. It should have been the other way around. So all these other tribes are failing where Judah prevailed. Not perfectly by any stretch, but did far better. So the Amorites forced the children of Dan into the mountains, for they would not allow them to come down to the valley. And the Amorites were determined to dwell in Mount Heres, in Ajalon, and in Shalbim. Yet when the strength of the house of Joseph became greater, they were put under tribute. Now the boundary of the Amorites was from the ascent of Akrabim, from Selah and upward. So I would like to end this study by rereading this passage in 1 Chronicles 5. And maybe now that we've gone through that, you could start to see how this little text really helps to explain the sweeping history of Israel's first centuries. What was going on in Israel in those first centuries before God chose David to be king and then blessed David and said that from his seed would come the one to rule over Israel forever, the Messiah, from his own body. And so from the time of Abraham until then, this tribal contest was going on for the messianic blessing, the right of the firstborn, called the birthright. So 1 Chronicles 5, I'll read it again. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was indeed the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, so that the genealogy is not listed according to the birthright. So Joseph should be the king. He should be the king. So Jacob blessed the sons of Joseph and gave them the birthright. So they had it. Yet Judah, verse 2, 1 Chronicles 5, 2, yet Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came a ruler, although the birthright was Joseph's. Jacob had given the birthright to Joseph, but Joseph eventually lost it. Benjamin had the opportunity, all the tribes had the opportunity, but Judah prevailed, so the Messiah came from the tribe of Judah, and we call Jesus Christ the Lion of the Tribe of Judah.